I'm Matt Godbolt.
And I'm Ben Rady.
And this is Two's Compliment, a programming podcast.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah.
Someone tweeted me the other day, or whatever. Social media interacted with me the other day and said, Matt, we listened to the podcast and we want to know, how are you? And it took me a long time to realize what they meant. And now, having just said this to you, so I'd like to, for the record, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Even
right.
though you never asked me.
Don't care. That's not that's not why I come to this podcast.
Excuse me. Oh, gosh. Well, I say I'm doing fine, but obviously
yeah, and then you're dying. And so you're lying to our audience right now.
Sorry.
You're saying, I'm
a cold.
Fine, but really you're dead.
I've got a bit of a cold going on here. As we were discussing in the pre-chat, I've been through the spending a week at a conference with 700 other people and worrying about talks and going through the emotional roller coaster of presenting them, and then the recovery where you go, and relax at the very end. I had the last talk, right? So I had to worry about it the whole way through. And then I relaxed, got on a plane, came home to my family, and promptly came down with a cold. So, you know, that's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
But it was a great time. I recommend it. Go to conferences, people. It's fun. It's fun to meet people and see them, like, as in the flesh, as other beings, unlike
three dimensions, or perhaps four dimensions, depending on how many dimensions you want to measure.
That's true. I guess it took long enough. We can measure the fourth dimension in that.
Like, what was the fourth dimension of your talk?
The fourth dimension. Whoa.
How long was it?
Oh, well, I had a few. I kept saying yes to people, which see, this is the problem, Ben. As you know, I have had a lot of extra time on my hands as I haven't had anything to distract me during the day, which means that at the back of my mind, I think there's no excuse not to say yes to everything that anyone brings up.
Yeah.
But there is a reason to say no occasionally, as I've now discovered, because otherwise you burn yourself out. But nevertheless, I had a great time. I had three talks and I was on two panels. So pretty much, and then they wanted me to appear on a third panel, and I'm like, no, that would mean literally every day of this 5-day conference I'm doing at least one thing, and I just want to have one day where I haven't got anything to worry about, primarily and selfishly, so the night before that I can go to the bar and have a couple of drinks without worrying about being hungover the next day, which I did do, which was fun. And I met up with a colleague of ours in said bar and had a great catch up and chat, but that's not what this is about. This was It was a good conference, and we're doing a podcast. I remember now, because we're just chatting now, like you and me would be chatting.
Well, this is every podcast.
I was just going to launch into giving you a whole spiel about what it was all about.
Well, I mean, that's as good of a podcast topic as any.
I guess.
You want to give a little recap of the talks, maybe for folks who haven't seen them yet? You can convince them to go.
Well, that's a good question. Well, first of all, I have just fiddled with these audio settings because I'm noticing my levels are really low here. So apologies to editor Matt.
Well, it's just the cold.
That could be. I mean, I look very small on here, but this is a new computer. I switched to my desktop computer, and of course, every setting is different. Anyway. The talk. Well, I did three. One of them was a repeat of one I've already done before, although I took the time to bring it up to date with all of the latest bits and pieces. And it was open content. So they have these sort of open content slots where essentially if there's a space and you pitch a talk and no one else pitches a talk, you can just talk about whatever you like. It doesn't have to fit in with the they don't record it.
Yeah.
They just sort of give you a room and say, have fun. And they put it on the schedule. So I did my JavaScript talk about emulating the BBC Micro, you know, my favorite
computer. The Beeb.
Beeb, absolutely. And I brought that sort of up to date slightly with all the things I'd done subsequently. And more importantly, I went back over the slides and like revamped them a little bit. Although I'd forgotten that this is one of my oldest presentations. I first presented it like 8 years ago, or a version of it. And my ideas about color palettes have changed considerably as I've aged. And so it was all done retro style. So it's all black with like white computer fonts. And it just, you can't read it on a projector. It's not visible. And I, the last time I had presented it was actually on one of those big LCD screens, and it was okay on that. But on a sort of rear projector or front projector, the contrast is just too dire, right? There's just this very stark white on a black background, and it's just too small. So that's always something to bear in mind as a presenter, is like, can it be read by the people in the room? But that went great. That was fun. It was easy. I'd done it before. And then I did a second one on Compiler Explorer and the features that you probably don't know about it, which was fun for me because I got to actually play around with my own website and kind of go, oh gosh, yeah, we've got all these features. Oh my God, I forgot we could do that. And, and half of these things are things I don't really know that well because I just merge them in and then go, that sounds great, whatever. But I haven't had a need to use the site all that much myself recently, obviously, as the sort of irony of Compiler Explorer is, if I don't have a day job, I have all the time to work on it, but I don't have a need to use it. So I don't really dog food it, right?
Right. Wow. Yeah. That is a dilemma.
It is. It is. Hello. Can I speak to Emma, please?
No, she's dead.
No. Whoa.
Dilemma.
Oh, die. Oh, it's dial. I see. I'm dial Emma.
Oh, dial Emma.
Yes.
That's a much better pun. You know,
that's none of them are good. Like, we're really, this is not. But anyway, I got to spend an hour sort of just going through the UI and whatever. And people say, oh, can I see your slides? We're sorry we couldn't make it. I'm like, there were three slides and they were basically prompts for me to then spend 15 minutes like poking around on the website and doing live demos, which is always a bit nerve wracking.
Yeah, right.
Especially when the conference Wi-Fi is a little flaky because there's 800 humans packed into a small area all trying to like feed off the same infrastructure. So it went okay. It reminded me, though, how massive Compiler Explorer has become and how lazy I have been. So, for example, one of the configuration for the front end is like a JSON document that says, you know, here's a list of all the compilers, here's for all the compilers, here's all the libraries that will work on those. There's a sort of combinatorial thing going in and there, and it's just one JSON document that is about, you know, 80 meg now compressed, which is a problem, right? That's when you're on crap Wi-Fi.
Sizable.
And so we've got some like ideas to, you know, either just in time load that because, you know, if you don't need to know every library for every compiler, it's only when you select the compiler in the dropdown do you need to grab that. But obviously that makes it a lot more complicated in the front. Right. Anyway, that came to bite me because I'm sat there going, and the page should have loaded by now, and knowing full well what's happening behind the scenes. It's like the 56K modem. The screeching is gradually bringing down this giant document. But anyway, it was fun to present. It worked out pretty well. I had some panels on AI. That was an interesting one, actually. The whole...
Oh, yeah. What were the panels?
So the flavor of the conference, obviously, it's a C... Well, sorry, this was CPPCon. Did I even say that? I don't even know that I did.
I don't know if you did.
No, so it was...
Well, we're saying it now.
It is CPPCon. So it's been said. It was CPPCon. Yeah. It was in Aurora, Colorado. Although the theme was not AI, there were a lot of AI talks, as there have been at other conferences. And I'd been asked to participate in a couple of panels discussing the use of AI. One, in terms of just general, how do we effectively use AI for C++? And another one on like, how might we use AI-assisted debugging, which was more of a discussion with a vendor that had like a plugin for their debugger. They Undo, who have like this reverse time traveling debugger, which essentially sort of emulates the CPU in some clever way. That's not really what it does. It's a big disservice to what they're trying to do, but like it lets you sort of backwards step. And so what you can do is you can kind of crash your program and then ask the AI, can you like GDB in and reverse back and look through the trace of instructions and try and work out where it went wrong. And that's kind of a cool technology. Anyway, so those panels were about, and most of the pre-planning, I'll be honest with you, was how do we appropriately discuss AI in a sort of inclusive way that means that folks who might not like the idea of AI can contribute.
And it was
important, but nobody ventured that's not strictly true, but everyone was either neutral or positive towards the idea. There were a few people who asked questions that were clearly like, I'm not sure about this, and that's fine, obviously. But yeah, I was. Most people there were interested in how we might use it well, because it's here anyway. It's kind of the vibe that I got. Right. Although, again, there's a selection bias. The people who turn up to a panel on this type of thing are probably pro. Although I would have thought, if you didn't like it and you wanted to publicly point out some flaws, you might also turn up to such a thing. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah. It's hard to have that kind of discussion, though. It's sort of like, here's a thing that people might hate. Why don't you, come to the 2 minutes hate and, vent about Big Brother?
Yeah.
As good as I'm going to make that pun or reference, not really a pun. But like, I could see a world in which anyone who would have like thoughtful, constructive things to say might almost be like, do I really want to go do this right now? Do I really want to get in an argument with a room full of people who almost certainly 90% of them are going to disagree with me? I don't know that I want to do that.
That's fair. But, we thought about it and we planned for it so that we were able to hopefully give folks a place to say their two penneth and then talk about it. But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, most of the conversations I had with people were how to use it rather than should we use it, which was an interesting thing. I wasn't expecting it. And then latterly I had the last talk I was very pleased with myself. Although Reddit didn't like my title when eventually it was posted. So most of these videos aren't out yet, except for the keynotes. So the keynotes got published pretty much as they finished. So that one is up. My last one is up. The biggest thread on the Reddit post where somebody had posted it, I didn't even know it was up. I only discovered it because someone added me on the Reddit thread. I'm like, what? Oh, I see. Oh gosh. And they were essentially saying that the name was stupid because it didn't tell you what the talk was. And I'm like, I don't write the talk name for the YouTube video. I write it for the people who are at the conference. And the people at the conference, not to put too fine a point in, have to come to my talk because it's a keynote. It's the
the title almost doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like you're going to be stuck in a room with me and I've got 90 minutes to talk to you and you can't do much about it other than walk out. Which I'm glad to say most people did not walk out of my talk. Some people left, and I like to think it's because they had planes to catch, but I could be wrong. Not everyone's going to agree with everything I say, and I tried not to.
I doubt that there was any huff involved in their walking.
I hope
out.
Not. I like to think not as well. But the controversial name was C++ Some Assembly Required.
Oh, that's a good name.
See, I thought so. I was so pleased with my
little I style. Reddit is dumb. That's a great name.
Obviously,
Some Assembly Required.
Reddit is on point. To be fair to the people on Reddit, the comment was, it doesn't tell me what the talk is. And I'm like,
sure, but it's an objectively awesome name.
Well,
so, I mean,
what
do you want?
Very kind to me, and we think very similarly. So I have to take that with a pinch of salt, although I am thankful you said that. But no, Reddit is correct, but that's the point of it. It was like, my idea is, and it was accused of being clickbaity and whatever, but it's like, it's not clickbaity because I didn't even think about it going on YouTube. Anyway, but the idea was, and folks can go find it on the interwebs now, on the YouTubes. It is me 100% thinking, well, everyone's going to come to the talk anyway, so no one's going to read the abstract, which was correct. Nobody read the abstract. And of course, if there's Godbot up on stage talking about assembly, it means one thing, right? And Some Assembly Required, we're going to stand up there, he's going to preach to us about how everyone should learn assembly. And I do. And I spend 25 minutes with a little bit of back history as to why I think why assembly is important to me, including some very dodgy photographs of me as a kid and some other very self-deprecating pictures, which you just kind of have to see. And I eventually show, I talk about assembly and all of its forms. I actually show a new feature in Compiler Explorer that I add in and I live deployed on stage. Although, I know that's confidence in my deploy ability there. I've learned that from a friend of mine. And then I kind of go to the next slide. I'm like, well, this is awkward. We seem to have finished a little bit early and I've got like 45 minutes of time left. I don't, And then I go back to the definition of assembly, which I show earlier and just show that like there's loads of definitions of assembly, one of which is assembly language, and we talk about assembly language. And then I basically go through the other five definitions of assembly and show how they are also incredibly relevant to C++. So there is the assembly of, you know, like a group of a sort of regulatory body is an assembly. So for example, okay, like in Britain, yeah, there's the That's Welsh cool. assembly, there is like various assemblies around the whatever. And obviously that means, you know, the C++ committee that defines the language. So we talk about how that fits in, how it's structured, how it fits. We talk about assembly meaning the process of putting things together, or an assembly, which is, you know, like a set of parts that have been put together. So there's all these different aspects of it, and all of which are really relevant to C++. So let me explore and just basically do a big community hug of like, this is great, we've got a load of cool bits and pieces going on in our language, and then at the end a call to action to say, hey, let's keep this up. You know, you're sat there in the audience, you're sat there on YouTube, you can join in, you know, go to a local meetup, you know, because also an assembly is like a congregation of people in one place for a purpose, and I'm like, point at the audience, like, you're here, right, this is, we are in an assembly right now,
right?
So anyway, that's what I thought it was cool. I thought it was a good double meaning, and it was 100% for the people in the room, and then hopefully people looking at the YouTube video afterwards will enjoy. But that was not the intention as such. You know, obviously you hope people to like it.
I think, I mean, that sounds like
but an it's
awesome talk.
One forgets how much work it is, right? It's so tiring, and I'm so glad I didn't have a real job while preparing for it. I mean, especially these. I mean, I don't. When was the last time? If you don't mind me asking, I know you have given presentations, you've given them at work and all that kind of stuff, but they're much more informal when we give them at work. You know?
Yeah.
I don't
tend to practice them when I do work.
What's your
process? The trap that I had kind of fallen into, I have to say, is that, you know, when I was consulting, like part of your job is giving talks.
I suppose, right? So.
Like that's sort
you're
of
kind of deal. Always presenting in a,
right.
You're always
like
on show.
And you have tons of opportunity to practice, right? Where like, you know, like, pretty much the go-to, and I mean, this is like circa 2008, so I'm sure things are completely different now, but the go-to tactic for most of the, you know, sort of like business development and salespeople that I worked with was, you know, stealing an idea from Jerry Weinberg and be like, give your best ideas away for free. That's how you get a job as a consultant, right? Like you have some company that you're working with that has some problem. Go tell them how to fix their problem for free over lunch. Just do that. And they will inevitably hire you because they're like, that sounds great. We don't actually know how to do that, though. So, you know, you have lots of opportunities to present on various ideas. And then, you know, you can do these at conferences. You can do them as sort of like some of these sort of like what are essentially sales pitches. Mm-hmm. And you just get good at it because, as you know, like a lot of a talk is just giving it over and over again and refining the material. It's a little bit like stand-up comedy, right? It's, like you just got to like, you know,
genuinely
do it and refine it, right?
It's yeah. Yes, exactly. 100%.
Yeah. So I've fallen out of that a little bit. And, you know, as you know, I had tried to kind of do some of these things at the various companies that we worked at. In some ways, because I had a lot of good material. In some ways, because I wanted to keep the skill up. But I will say that in the last, you know, 15 years since I've been consulting, that has atrophied a little bit.
Right.
And I don't really, and you know, COVID didn't help either. And so I don't know. I feel like I probably have some sort of talks in reserve in the bank, essentially, that I could go out and give in a public forum. But I don't really have a good sense of like what the best forums would be, right? Like local conference, national conference, which ones? I spoke again years and years and years ago at a conference called No Fluff, Just Stuff.
I remember that one.
Yeah. I remember that pretty fondly. There were the organizers of that conference, really great. A lot of great speakers there. You know, I spoke at like the Agile conferences back when Agile was not a stupid idea.
Wow, that's a sentence.
I mean, you know, you can just go back in our podcast history and get all of my opinions on that.
Fair.
Go ask James Grenning, one of our signatories of the Agile Manifesto, what he thinks of it.
And podcast guest as well.
Yeah, that's right. Now just go listen to that episode and that'll tell you everything you need to know. But you know, it's like there were some of those conferences that I went to and liked, but it's like I don't feel like I have a good sense right now of like for this talk, which I could probably just give at the drop of a hat right now, right? Like just fire up the slides and talk for 60 minutes and it'll be great. Where is the audience for this talk? Uh-huh. What conference should I go to give it? I don't really have a good sense for that.
Right. Right. That's interesting because actually somebody did make the suggestion, hey, have you ever considered doing like a live recording of Two's Compliment? Maybe you could come to CPBCon next year and do one there. I'm like, well, this isn't a C++ podcast. It never has been. And it's not the kind of place that you would hang out at. And, you know,
I mean, maybe.
I know, but a week off or whatever it would be to be immersed yourself, that seems a bit much. You know, something like the go-to conferences or something that's a bit more, across industry would make more sense, I think. So,
go-to is in Chicago too, right?
They have them everywhere, but there is one in Chicago, which makes it significantly easier to go to. Yeah, haha.
Pun retrospectively intended. Well, if an organizer at the go-to conference wants to invite me to the next one in Chicago, I will gladly attend
and give one of your talks. What talk would you give? What you've sort of alluded to, you have some, or
there's obviously a whole bunch of talks on testing, and I could give any one of those. I feel like that might be a little too on brand for me.
Your whole deployment based thing sounds like there's a, you know, like branch based deployment thing sounds like,
you know,
should
I don't
be.
Actually have a talk for that. And that would be a great example of something where, you know, and I'm sure you've never done this where you sign up to do the talk and then you're like, and what am I going to talk about?
Absolutely
again?
Never done that. Not did that.
Never done that once before.
Specifically either. No. Wasn't on holiday in Costa Rica, freaking my hell out going, what the heck am I going to talk about for 2 weeks going,
No, that would be a good one, actually. That would be a good talk.
Well, let's fill in the form right now. We'll go and we'll speak to, I think, one of your current colleagues, I think, has a very good contact at the go-to conferences.
When is the next?
I know it was this year? I don't know. Or is it last year? I know it was basically down the road from the office.
There was one in 2024. So last year.
All right. Maybe there's another one this year.
At the Sears Tower.
Exactly.
I don't care what this website
says. The Willis
Tower. Nope. That's not what it's called.
It is called. Now we're into extreme Chicago lore here for our listener.
It's the Sears Tower.
Although I've been also told that we have more than one listener now by many people. So we should probably stop. Three or four, I think. That seems a reasonable approximation.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. I would definitely enjoy that. That would be fun. And maybe now that I have half of an empty nest, or is it half full? I can't tell. I could maybe find a little bit more time to travel and go to some conferences that are not in Chicago.
Well, that would be cool either way. But no, I think there's definitely a market for your brand of delivery and content. Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting to see. But yeah, so the short answer is you haven't really given a formal presentation, like formal in vertical, for since I've known.
I haven't given a presentation at a conference since 2013,
which is a very long time ago.
Yeah, I think 2013.
Gosh,
is the most recent one.
Yeah,
yeah,
and yeah, from my own experience, like the. Giving a presentation internally is like you're kind of giving a presentation to people who are on your side. Most people are coming
along.
It's
way easier.
And that's also way true easier. I've discovered at conferences, and maybe that's just because of who I am and it's luck, but I think generally speaking, when I go to see somebody, I want to see them succeed. I don't go to a conference talk that sounds like, I bet this person doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. And then I stand there with my arms folded in the front row, grimacing every time they make a mistake and then put that, you know, that's not how it is. It's mostly, I want you to both entertain and teach me something that I didn't know or make me think about something in a different way. And so I'm on the side of the presenter.
Yeah. And yeah, although I will say that one of the skills that you do have to have speaking at conferences is to be able to deal effectively with people who are essentially trolls. And you don't get that. It depends on the size of the room, right? Like if you have like 1,000 people in a room, you're not going to get that. If you have 3 people in a room, you're all like doing a lightning talk or something like that. You're probably also not going to get that. It's sort of like that group that's in the middle where you get the one person that, you know, wants to do stuff that's not really helpful for anybody. And they're asking you questions. And there is a little bit of an art. There's a little bit of an art to just sort of delicately being like, well, why don't we talk about this after?
Yeah, that's everyone has the crowd control aspect is a little bit of it, but
yeah. And you don't really get that in a like office setting, right? Like, or if you do, that's,
you could actually talk to someone. Yeah. There are people there who will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's interesting. That it's going back to your point, actually, I did think, you know, like definitely when I practice, and I do practice, I'm sure you do as well, but I don't for like the internal company ones. I think that's what I was going to come around to is the fact that, like, you know, for a 90-minute keynote, every time I practice, it's 2 hours at least, because it takes longer to practice. Yeah. I'm taking notes and I'm talking to my darn self in my basement, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm sat up here staring out into space and pretending that I'm talking to someone, or I'm walking the dog, honestly, with my headphones in so I don't look completely crazy so people think I'm talking to somebody. And the whole process, you realize, gosh, this takes a long time, right? You know, it's the same thing that my kids have with their music practices. It's like, it's really easy to be good at the beginning because you start at the beginning every time, and then maybe you run out of time or you realize there's a mistake, and so you start again. Mm-hmm. You start again from the beginning. And so the beginning is good. And that's a great start, right? There's nothing better than standing up on stage and going like, I have the first 30 seconds of this absolutely nailed.
Yeah.
And now once you've done that, the nerves start to go, everything starts to fall into place.
Yeah.
Everything's good again. But it does mean that you start getting towards the end. You're like, oh, this is slightly, I can't remember. And, you know, it's 90 minutes in, potentially, that you're still talking about these things. But I'm just saying it's a big investment of time to get something up to the sort of level of polish that one would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned about stand-up and, like, you know, you say it out loud and, like, I say it out loud. Yeah. I try and imagine what people are thinking, or sometimes I even record them and play them back, which is awful. And you get a sense of like what works, what doesn't work. And when you start saying stuff, do you like tangle yourself up in words and kind of go down a rabbit hole and go, okay, note to self, don't start going down that
thing,
because that's a whole other talk and you don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm. That material is not going to play in Peoria.
No. What?
I forget where this is from, but it's just sort of like, I totally forget where this is from. I'm sure the internet knows, but it's like, this just like comment about stand-up comedy routines. It's like, is it going to play in Peoria? Meaning it's sort of like, okay, you can tell that joke in a comedy club in New York and people will laugh.
But in the middle of...
But if you go on tour, is anyone going to actually think it's funny?
Got it. Yeah. No, I kind of got the gist of what it was
from
the context. But yeah, sort of, yeah, as you say it out loud, you kind of get a feel for it. You kind of build this sort of thing. You rearrange slides, whatever. But one difference with the thing you suggested about comedy clubs is that I don't know that if you're in a comedy club and you're standing up on stage doing improv, that the audience wants you to succeed necessarily. Right? I do when I'm in a comedy club. But I've seen people have to put up with the drunk people who are just trying to like make a point that you don't look the way that they wanted you to look, or you're not saying the things that you would like to say.
Yeah. I mean, the incidence of trolls in comedy clubs I would expect to be a little bit higher, but I think the fundamental dynamics are the same. You go to a comedy club mostly to laugh. And laughing is a little infectious, and it's sort of like, you know, the more funny something is, the more funny it gets kind of stuff. And then there's also the people in the audience who are the hecklers.
Right.
And as we were just talking about, like, that can also happen at conferences. I would totally grant that it's less, but it's not zero.
It is not zero. Yeah.
It's kind of like a percentage in both cases.
I think, that's a good point. I definitely have had, I think, we can both think of examples where people have said things like, wait a second, I don't know this is exactly good faith.
Just the complete non sequitur that is just trying to show off how smart they are, or just trying to derail you, or be like, have you read this thing about this thing? And it's like, no, I haven't. Well, how? Why?
Kate Gregory, one of my favorite speakers, has this fantastic sort of preamble to her questions where she goes, remember, a question is where you ask something of me and I reply. You know, that is basically just reminding people what a question is, which, you know, she's even better, nicely put.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to go find a recording.
Yeah, she has this thing at the end. And that. I'm just going to quote her.
I'm going to remind everyone of Kate Gregory's definition of a question.
Yeah, right. It's just say, like,
you ask me something, and then I say a response.
That's how that works, right?
It's That's what this is.
This is not more of a question than a comment. You're like, right, more than a comment than a question. Sorry, whatever. Well, then, definitionally, not a question. Yes. Go away.
Yes.
Yeah. We can talk about this afterwards.
Yeah, the whole, like, four paragraphs of speech, and then, have you thought about that? It's like, before you said it? No, I hadn't thought about that. I'm not sure that I should. But, you know, okay, sure, fine.
So, yeah. So, yeah, that was my week last week. I've got a lot of interesting ideas to look into now this week. You know, that's the thing about conferences. They inspire you and you're like, oh, yeah, this is cool. I didn't think of that, right? So yeah, I watched some really cool and interesting talks on how, like, Intel are writing libraries to do embedded software using, like, the absolute latest features of C++. Mm-hmm. And then they're showing that it can cut down the size of their firmware and make it very, you know, declarative instead of, like, error prone. And that was cool because, you know, the received wisdom about embedded software is, no, just write it in C and then it's better. And you're like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was fascinating. C++ is getting reflection, like proper reflection. Compile time reflection, and everyone was showing off tricks and tips about how to use it, and even doing some things with reflection that kind of allow you to take a sort of object oriented ish view of an object and turn it into a more like a data driven thing, where you've got, instead of, like, one so for example, a particle, right? The classic example is, I'd love in my OO world to have a particle which has an X, a Y, a velocity in X, a velocity in Y, a color, and a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's, I can draw a particle, I can ask it to draw itself, all that good stuff, right? And the upside is it's easy to write. The downside is the performance, it could be better.
You're
wondering where I was going with that. Now you've kind of...
No, I knew exactly
what you did. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. That was my first job out of school, actually, is both creating and then fixing that problem. But go ahead.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Maybe that's another episode we could talk about.
Maybe so. I don't know. But that's good. But yeah, so, you know, that is where you start and it makes a lot of sense. But then CPUs don't like, or compilers certainly aren't necessarily very good at turning that into perfect code. It's much better if you can have all of the X's next to each other than all of the Y's next to each other, all the VX's next to one, all the VY's next to each other. And then, like, the CPU can pick up giant slabs of X's and then giant slabs of VX's and add them all together at once and then store them back. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. But it makes you think about it in a very different way. And that's awkward because, you know, OO purism says, no, it's nice to have a function. The function says, you know, X plus equals VX, Y plus equals VY, color, whatever. And the, you know, I think Mike Acton gave a presentation probably 15 years ago at CPPCon. It's like, I think the most watched CPPCon video, where he basically explained the idea of data-oriented design, which, you know, most people who've done any kind of large-scale fluid dynamics or particle stuff have done before. And certainly anyone who's been in the games industry, like, every particle system I've ever written has just been that way. But it was like, no, this is just how you should design your data this way. And it's much more than I've just said. You know, it's about reframing things around the way that data flows, as opposed to the sort of conceptions that you put on into your code to make your code look nice. It's like, no, code processes data, so the data is primary, not the code that does it. And you're like, and I can have disagreements with that. You and I could have disagreements, but there are definitely times where it makes sense. Anyway, with this reflection magic, people have been able to show that you could kind of write it looking and acting, for all intents and purposes, like the sort of structure way, but then have it, like, auto devolve into sets of arrays, parallel arrays, or whatever, and have the relevant transformations happen. And I was like, this sounds both very cool but also mildly terrifying, because you're starting to make the language rewrite itself as part of the compilation, which I already have certain issues with. It's powerful, and I think once we get good ways of visualizing it and debugging it and stepping into code that maybe doesn't even exist because the reflection made it come into being by it going, oh, You know, I found a field called X, and now I'm going to add a function to this class called whatever. I don't know. That's where it gets tricky. But that was definitely the vibe of the conference, was that this is coming. It's pretty interesting to see where C++ is going with it. And yeah, I'd forgotten where I was going with this, the thread of it now. But anyway, I had a great time, and I'm excited to give this a go. I want to try it out with some of my emulators that have some things that I've been hacking around on that could potentially use Reflection instead now.
Mm-hmm. I would have to imagine, and you would know this better than me, that Reflection in C++ would have a pretty significant impact on tooling, both developer tools,
yep,
and also kind of like deployment configuration type tooling, where, you know, one of the classic problems is, you know, you introduce a bug into production that actually just lives in a config file, and somehow people, like, I feel like they're more okay with it when really the net effect is the same as, oh, it's just a config problem. It's like, yeah, but it's still a problem, right? Like,
yeah.
You had the same result. It's just that it was in a YAML file instead of a CPP file.
Right.
But it's like same thing.
You still end up having to write, well, how do we fix this? Well, you write tests for it, just like you write anything else, and you make sure, yeah, that you test your YAML. Why am I? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know in that sense. So it is, effectively, it's an extension of the way templating works in the compiler at some level, right?
Mm.
So it is 100% static. So there's no kind of weird poking back in type stuff that you might get from like the Java style of runtime, mm-hmm, reflection, where you can do dependency injection in this kind of like exogenous way, or maybe even come in with a YAML file and like instantiate large swathes of the code sort of, mm-hmm, dynamically. So I think we're probably agreeing here. Like the debuggability for me is the bit that I'm most, yeah, worried about, because yeah, there is like aspects of this code that don't exist,
right?
Potentially don't exist. Now, in the first aspect of it, that's very limited. So there's something called template 4 where I can like loop over statically and sort of stamp out copies of a piece of code, mm-hmm, and I could sort of then loop over the members of this thing, right? So I can kind of reflect over the type T that I've got and say, for all public methods, execute, mm-hmm, this body of code. And so you could like make it, you know, printf the name of that thing. And so that means that, yes, you don't see that code, like the literal code, you don't see stamped out 10 copies, but you can at least read the loop. And so okay, it's, yeah, looping over all the things. So it looks a little bit like it's a loop. It's not really a loop, because it's a loop at compile time that it generates this stuff. But you can imagine, yeah, as the sophistication of that grows, you might end up with pieces of code that are much more complicated, that, you know, do more, have more far-reaching side effects. And that's where it gets interesting for a start. That's, yeah, where you can start doing, yeah, some really clever and cool things. But you really would like to be able to like kind of print out the code at that point and say, can you just show me what the code is at that point? And there are debug techniques where you could do that. And at the moment, mm-hmm, like in order to actually use those more sophisticated techniques, the way that you achieve them is in fact to get the C++ code to print out C++, and then you recompile the C++. So it kind of, it becomes visible by the very fact that you have to do this intermediate step. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's obviously a, yeah, bit more awkward, right? It's not like, right, you know, more general purpose metaprogramming, where you can write a program that kind of assembles itself and then it evals itself in JavaScript to make a new program, and then you just carry on with it. It's like, no, you can't,
right,
you can't do that yet. But yeah, maybe that's a feature. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, we're really lost in the weeds here, but it's a fascinating change in the way that C++ is going to be used, I think. And certainly just from, you know, the boring boilerplate of like, I need to serialize my class that has 10 fields. You're like, well,
right,
or I want to write, yeah, a debugger that just says, print out that object over here in a debug way. And it's like, well, for all things, just print out the name of the thing and then print out the thing that it is. So, you know, X, yeah, equals X.
A lot fewer terrible regular expressions being applied to CPP files. A lot fewer
in make files
rolling
to try
their own parsers. Yeah,
exactly.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And, mm-hmm, yeah. So there were some cool. There were some other people who presented like tools that they're writing that do some of this stuff as well. And obviously that yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff. And so I was pretty like, oh, C++ is alive and well and doing, you know, and thriving, if anything. So that was a pleasant aspect. And it's always nice to hang out with a whole bunch of folks. There were a lot of like new grads or even folks who haven't graduated yet who were attending. Oh, wow, yeah. And I was so excited to meet them and hear how excited they are about it. Cause I'm like, you know, this is great. There is fresh blood still coming in and they're interested in the kind of things that I was interested in when I was younger, you know, like hardware and how things really work. In fact, one of the questions I got at the closing keynote was, you know, how do we get more people interested in this? How are we not going to lose people? I'm like, I don't think we have to do anything. People who are interested in this will find their way. And like, there are literally two people standing in line for questions who I could point at who were like relatively young, 20 odd, not even graduated yet, who were going to ask questions about like how to do X. Or it just made me feel like, yeah, that people have found their way already. We don't need to go out of our way to welcome. Well, we make sure that the ground is fertile for them to come stepping into. But we don't have to go and abscond from them off the streets and like point them at it and say, hey, come do this. They find it. And as long as the community is welcoming, they will find their people.
Yeah. Yeah. To maybe tie this back to conferences for a second, you just got to do the Pac-Man thing.
Yes.
Right. Where you have a group, you have a circle of people that are all standing around, and you open a space in the circle so that anyone can come in. And as soon as they do, then you just repeat that process. And you just got to do that.
It is.
It makes a huge difference.
It is such an important thing to do. And I think, yeah, we should probably end on that piece of life advice. Because I do this now, if I'm at like a function with my kids, like school or whatever.
That's right.
You end up in that little funny clique of like the four people that you know, yourself included. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, you've made this sort of impenetrable wall.
Yeah.
And you know that there is another person in that room who's like looking at the four of you going like, can I? Oh, no, I shouldn't interrupt them. But if you're stood there like a Pac-Man with a big empty gap,
right,
they maybe will sidle up and then you'll be like, oh, hi, who are you? And then you, as you say, you open the mouth a bit wider. And eventually, obviously, you have to kind of bud off into multiple things. And we're into some sort of biology metaphor now of like, what is it called? Mitosis or meiosis?
Oh, I forget.
One of the two. Anyway.
But yeah. Be kind to the obsessive compulsive people in your group who will be compelled to fill that space because they can't do it any other way. Welcome them in.
That's
and then be like, I'm sorry, but I have to make another gap.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
That sounds cool. Yeah. All right, friend. Yeah. Well, we've been chatting away for a lot longer than I thought we would because you have very kindly listened to me jabber about
it's all good stuff, this man.
And
also that conference talk title is just the best.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Says. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah,
it's the best. You're cool. All right, well, I will
until next time.
Speak to you next time. Yeah, take care, friend.
You've been listening to Two's Compliment, a programming podcast by Ben Rady and Matt Godbolt. Find the show transcript and notes at www.twoscompliment.org. Contact us on Mastodon. We are at twoscompliment@hackyderm.io. Our theme music is by Inverse Phase. Find out more at inversephase.com.